This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far. Viewer discretion is advised. Hello, and welcome to Into the Night, a Five Nights at Freddy's podcast. I am your host, Nick, and thank you so much for listening. Turning back the clock once more, when Edwin Murray lost his son, he found himself incapable of even lifting a wrench, much less a screw. Every ounce of momentum, every flicker of creativity, was drained from him. Pronounced dead the moment he saw his boy's broken, bloodied body on the cold black pavement. The factory became unbearable to him, and he left it in silence, allowing mold and dust to accumulate over the months in his absence. Fazbear Entertainment made several attempts to contact him, but upon investigating his place of work, they discovered that Edwin had vanished without informing them of his whereabouts. Although his contract remained valid since he was working on commission, part of his compensation included the management of the very property he was living in. And after enough time had passed, Edwin had effectively breached the terms of his contract, resulting in the property reverting to Fazbear Entertainment as one of their many assets. Still, the place was in a state after his departure. There was no power after Edwin stopped responding with the electric company. Scours of paperwork stored in a system only the man who filed them could comprehend, and half-finished projects were strewn across the vast production floor of the large, now-abandoned lace factory. If Fazbear Entertainment was going to turn this loss into a profit, they would need this factory to begin moving like clockwork and take what Edwin had already started and procure any and all knowledge they could glean from his unfinished work. This is episode 39, The Mimic, part 2. Dominic and his team arrived in front of Edwin's factory around 10 in the morning. Their supervisor, Ron, had informed them that Fazbear Entertainment anticipated this cleanup and reclamation project would take several months. Ron told the big guys upstairs that they could probably get it all figured out in about a month. So, in engineer speak, that gave Dominic and his entourage 3 months to spruce everything up before the uppers would start to get antsy. Dominic strained to open the large steel doors, his teeth clenched as he fought to pry it loose. In addition to himself, Dom was occupied by Glenn and Harry. Glenn stood nearly as tall as Dominic, at around 6'4", and both were well-built men. However, while Dominic was often described as having sharp features, Glenn's face was more rounded. Dominic sported a thick, long, wavy, dark hair, flecked with premature gray, whereas Glenn had neatly buzzed-down brown hair that appeared to be self-trimmed. Although they had only been friends through their work at Fazbear Entertainment, Dominic had always sensed a DIY ethos about Glenn, someone who believed that purchasing items was for suckers when you could simply make them yourself. He was also convinced that Glenn was either ex-military or an ex-cop. There was a deep darkness in his eyes, a reflection of someone who had witnessed the worst of humanity. The third member of their trio, reluctantly included, was little Harry. He stood at least a foot shorter than the other two men, barely reaching 5'4" if he stood up straight, which he rarely did. Harry possessed the courage of his stature, which was to say, not much at all. In many ways, he resembled more of a mouse than a man. His hunchback gave him the appearance of a rodent learning to walk on two legs, and his large ears and button nose reminded Dom of a hamster. The only reason he was here was that Dominic had been ordered to bring him, and Harry had no choice but to comply. Apparently, the kid was a whiz with modern technology. While Dom and Glim were engineers, they predominantly focused on mechanics. Harry had training in robotics and software coding, and he certainly looked the part. Unlike Glenn, who wore mechanic overalls over a simple shirt, and Dom, who opted for a casual red polo and black jeans, Harry was dressed in a smart shirt, complete with a bow tie, even sporting a pocket protector, like the little kid he was. Frustrated by the stubborn doors, Dominic pulled a tire wrench from his tool belt and began to pry open the building's double doors. After a momentary struggle, the door finally gave way, and Dom pushed it open with a sickening creak. Beyond the doors, the feeble light of the mid-morning sun struggled to penetrate the wispy gray clouds, failing to illuminate the area. Although the forecast didn't call for rain, the sky increasingly hinted at an impending downpour. Dominic hoped this place had a decent roof to keep them dry. He hefted his heavy-duty tactical flashlight and aimed it at the thick darkness, which felt almost like a black wall, before flicking it on. Uncomfortably, Harry tiptoed behind him, his warm breath moist against the back of Dominic's shoulder blades.
What do you see?
Dominic swung the radiant beam of light across the factory's main floor, feeling his neck muscles tense as the flashlight illuminated what appeared to be a massive machine with multiple jagged teeth. Glenn was the first to speak up.
What is that thing?
Dom looked it over and tried to recall what Ron told him about the building.
Some kind of loon, I think. From what I heard, this place was a lace factory before that Murray dude bought it. It's probably the machine that makes it.
It's creepy.
Harry slid from behind Dominic, chewing his lower lip.
This whole place is creepy.
What are you afraid of?
I've heard stories.
What stories?
Harry shook his head, clutching his flashlight like a cross for protection.
My mom always says that talking about something, it gives it more power, or something like that.
Dominic snorted. This was why he referred to Harry as kid, despite him being older than him. What man worth his weight in salt and sweat still believed in superstitions and ghost stories? That said, a part of Dominic couldn't help but wonder. What had happened that made Harry reluctant to give it any power? Glenn flicked on his flashlight.
Are we going to just stand here like three scaredy cats, or are we going in?
In an effort to expedite the process, Glenn gave Harry a gentle push into the building. Harry stumbled forward and glanced back at Glenn with a pained expression. Glenn reciprocated with a pointed look. Harry wanted to say something. It was written all over his face. But he held his tongue, pulling out his own stubby flashlight, and started to walk ahead. After a few steps, the other two men followed suit.
All right, then. Let's get this done so we can go back to my place and barbecue those ribs you brought last week, Dom.
Ribs? I thought we were doing hot dogs! I hate ribs. They're so gory. They made me think of dead things.
And hot dogs don't.
Okay. Come on, you two.
Dominic walked ahead of Harry and Glenn's bickering, attempting to non-verbally re-establish his control over them. He didn't mind Harry's caution. They should all be wary on what the state of the building was like, and so far it was in a clear state of neglect and disrepair. With just a few sweeps of their light beams, they cut through the darkness, revealing several pale green pillars with peeling paint, evenly spaced between the building's outer walls, which were a dingy gray and cracking from what appeared to be water damage. This building was already a hazard filled with dust and germs. The last thing Dominic needed was Glenn's toxicity slowing down their progress and Harry's cowardice becoming infectious.
Is this place sound?
And right on cue.
Do you think they would have sent us here if it wasn't safe?
I mean...
Before Harry could express his discontent, a sudden whoosh of air rushed into the building. Dominic's long hair whipped around his face, getting into his mouth as he struggled to swipe it away. Suddenly, a deafening sound of metal slamming shut behind him startled all the men. Dominic rolled around, and his flashlight beam landed on the now-closed double doors. Harry, who had also rotated to face the closed doors, stared at them with a deer-in-headlights expression, his face, illuminated with a pale yellow from his flashlight's glow, looked ghostly white.
Boo!
Harry nearly jumped out of his shoes as Glenn sneaked up behind him, jabbing at his sides to toy with his pressure points. Dominic also flinched slightly from Glenn's sudden scare, but played off with a playful snicker.
Glenn, that's not funny!
Come on, Harry. Let's go scope the place out and see what we're up against here.
Harry swallowed hard and nodded, though his entire body betrayed him as a jittery mess on the inside. Dominic patted him on his bony shoulders and took the first tentative steps away from the now closed doors, leading the way toward the center of the factory floor. Dominic dropped his satchel on the floor, where it landed with a thud and several clanks as the tools inside jostled together. Glenn and Harry set down their bags and followed the arc and sway of Dominic's flashlight beam as it surveyed their surroundings. And Dominic was not pleased with what he saw. Aside from the massive loom on the far wall of the expansive space, the first floor of the three-story building was relatively open. The floor was flanked by two staircases, one main staircase, wide and steep, while the other, shrouded in murk, appearing to be a secondary staircase, partially concealed behind a wall. Back when this facility operated as a lace factory, it was likely designated for office workers to access the production room without disrupting the workflow of the ground crew. Speaking of lace, throughout the open area, piles of lace laid limp, dirty, entangled at the base of several support pillars and against the cracked brick walls. Dominic's heart skipped a beat at the fleeting thought that the pillars themselves might somehow be supported by this crumbling fabric. However, he quickly dismissed the idea, realizing that the entire building would be a crumbled ruin if that was the case. Harry started to walk forward towards Dominic's left. There was a long work table piled high with wires and scrap metal, alongside a few other tables that resembled medical slabs, bearing half-finished robots and electronic components. Behind the tables, a metal garment rack held an assortment of Fazbear character costumes, like a disturbing carousel. Dominic directed his flashlight beam onto each of the dust-covered mascot faces. A Freddy Fazbear costume, a Chica costume, a Foxy costume, a Bonnie the Bunny costume, and a couple of unfamiliar clown costumes. He had never seen these characters before, although he knew Fazbear's CEO, Mr. Afton, had a fascination with circuses and carnivals. Dominic had never been fond of them himself, even as a child, especially after his parents allowed him to watch Disney's Pinocchio. Pleasure Island had truly soured any affection he had for clowns and carnivals, and these bright pink, yellow, green, and blood red and black court jesters would fit right into that duplicitous fare. A shuffling of fabric caught Dominic's attention to his right. He flicked his gaze over and saw Glenn moving a fuzzy gray cloth on a small cot that appeared to be meant for a child. Glenn cocked his head as he examined it. The cot itself bore an indent in the middle, as if something heavy had once been placed there. Dominic squinted. There was something else nestled within that depression, near the center. It resembled a small, dingy white animal. Glenn picked it up, and Dominic watched as the large clump of lace crumbled in his hands. Dominic chuckled to himself. They would need to restore the light somehow if the darkness was going to play tricks like this on him. For a fleeting moment, he had thought that pile of lace resembled a tiger cub. Dominic turned and directed his light to the opposite side of the room. There, he observed a multitude of gears and metal rods strewn across the floor, each adorned with a grimy wool and thread. It was peculiar. Despite the moldy fabric clinging to them, the items appeared to have been disturbed relatively recently.
What's that over there?
Dominic shifted the direction of his flashlight so that it conjoined with a beacon of light from Harry's. The light reflected off of something silvery and slanted.
Cool. Looks like that Edwin guy installed himself a slide.
A slide?
Intrigued, Dominic stepped past two of the pillars and arrived at the base of a secondary staircase. Someone, most likely Murray, had affixed a long metal slide to one of the walls of the staircase. It descended from the landing above, now shrouded in darkness, to the concrete floor of the first level. At the base, a couple of old lumpy mattresses lay scattered across the concrete, providing a cushioned landing for anyone using the slide. It probably functioned better during Murray's time, both in appearance and odor. Now, a foul stench of animal feces permeated the air, emanating from the mattresses, where a small lump shifted restlessly within one of them. Most likely a rat.
Hey, Dom. Not that being in a dark and dank warehouse with you and Harry isn't something I've dreamed about, but what exactly is it we are supposed to do here?
I was hoping it'd be obvious when we got here, but so far...
Dom shrugged.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Harry, with a look of immense curiosity, walked over to the long work table.
Murray was an engineer. Maybe we're supposed to finish up his projects, get them functional, and get him out of here?
Could be. But we should probably scope out the building just before we jump to any conclusions.
That'll take forever. We should split up and cover more ground.
Split up? Have you ever played D&D before? You never split the party up!
I'll take never have I ever had a girlfriend for 200, Alex.
Dominic rolled his eyes, feeling as if he were back home with his younger brothers, bickering over what to do for the day. This wasn't the first time he had to remind himself that, despite Harry's stature, demeanor, and appearance, he was actually the oldest member of their trio, outpacing Glenn and Dominic by 3 years. But with his large round eyes, button nose, and oversized ears, Harry would likely forever appear boyish. Dom stepped up and tried to reassert control over his two co-workers.
Quit it, you two. Glenn's right, Harry. We can get this done faster if we know more about this place.
No way! I won't go anywhere alone in here!
You're such a little...
That's fine. I think we've seen what there is to see down here. That just leaves two more floors. Glenn, why don't you and Harry go on up to the third floor and check that out? I'll take the second floor. Then we'll meet back down here and take stock of what we're facing. That work for you?
Dom turned his gaze over to Glenn with a sterner expression.
Whatever.
Okay then. Let's go.
Better not run off without me, you little tyke.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Dominic began his ascent up the main staircase beside the slide, the echoes of Glenn and Harry's footfalls resonating behind him. The stairs were steep and wide, yet they felt reasonably sound beneath his weight. The black wrought iron handrails climbing the wall alongside them remained sturdy and intact. Dom's athletic shoes scuffed against the stairs as he ascended, his flashlight aimed upward. Upon reaching the second floor landing, the three men directed their beams down a narrow hallway, revealing a series of closed doors alongside one open doorway. In unison, the men turned and shined their lights up the next flight of stairs in the corner of the landing, although narrower than the main staircase. They were just as steep, half hidden beneath the ceiling of the second floor, which was swallowed by an inky maw of darkness.
Oh man, that's not good.
Come on, it'll be an adventure.
I don't like adventures.
Tough luck. Come on.
Dom watched as Glenn pulled Harry toward the third floor stairway. The wooden steps, once painted black like the concrete ones, had mostly lost their color. Glenn placed a tentative foot on the first step, noting its noticeable give. After testing the second step, he continued upward, his confidence growing, though he still looked uneasy, dragging Harry along behind him. Harry shot Dominic a forlorn glance over his shoulder, prompting Dom to offer silent support before turning his attention to his own adventure. He wouldn't have admitted it out loud, but Dom wasn't too excited about his task either. He tried to tell himself not to be a wuss and started walking down the narrow hallway. The first two doors he tried were locked. Odd, he thought, but he decided not to worry about it for the moment. It was better to explore what he could reach before attempting to batter down a locked door. The third door led to a storeroom filled with boxes. From what he could tell, they were all packed with robotics parts. Circuitry, wiring, gears, nuts, bolts, you name it. One box, its exterior revealing a strange-looking robotic vacuum cleaner, caught his eye. While it was probably in disrepair, it did spark a flicker of nostalgia. He remembered how his parents had gifted something similar to his grandmother a few years back. Aside from that one exception, every other cardboard box was filled with more of the same. The next room was also filled with boxes, plastic boxes with click locks on the side. All of them were labeled and stacked to the ceiling, but Dom was able to make out a few labels.
Fiona's hats, Fiona's shoes, bakeware, photo albums, first floor books. The hell does that mean? Games, puzzles, souvenirs, Edmund's photography equipment.
Dominic stopped checking the labels. These were clearly Murray's belongings. He didn't know much about Edwin Murray, but he was aware that he was a widower and had heard about the tragic accident involving his child some time ago. Poor guy. Fiona must have been his wife. The boxes were all dingy, dusty, and musty. Moisture had clearly seeped in, and they reeked of mold. Most of the contents inside must have been damaged. Dominic backed out of the room, feeling a wave of sadness wash over him at the sight of the packed-up remnants of a once happy life. Dominic continued on down the hall. In the next room, he found more boxes of Murray's belongings. Still nothing interesting. So far, he hadn't found anything helpful. Certainly nothing that Fazbear Entertainment would want. In the room after that, however, things changed. As Dom walked through the open doorway at the end of the hall, he deduced from the interior architecture, where the upper half of the walls were frosted glass, that this was the factory's office space. It had been converted into a small living area. An old-fashioned high-back sofa and two wing-back chairs occupied the room. Despite the color of the leather being sun-bleached, it was probably originally a nice pale yellow, but had since faded to a dirty tan. The design looked quite aristocratic, like the furnishing you'd see in an old manor. Even the end tables and the coffee table, caked in layers of dust, exuded an antique and refined design. Dom moved past the old furniture toward an opening on the far side of the room. As he stepped in, he discovered a small gallery kitchen. A once cheerful yellow counter, perfect for food prep, stood in the center, flanked by a white farmhouse-style sink and a narrow fridge against the wall. At the end of the kitchen, a two-person table laid knocked over beneath a boarded-up window. Dom looked at the nearby window. For the first time, he thought about all the boarded-up windows. Although he knew the factory had been vacant for months, all the windows were covered with plywood, securely nailed in place. I mean, it would be one thing if it were just the exterior, but the fact that it was the same on the inside raised questions. This wasn't exactly a dangerous part of town. In fact, there was no dangerous part of town here. It just struck him as odd. Dominic's nose twitched as he caught a whiff of something rotten. At least, he hoped it was just rotting food. Pulling his shirt collar over his nose, he aimed his flashlight across the kitchen. The counters and tables were bare, but when the beam landed on the lower part of the fridge, he froze. It appeared to be leaking something foul. A large reddish-brown stain cascaded down the lower air vents and formed a dried puddle on the grimy light blue linoleum floor. Dominic took a step toward the fridge. At the same instant, a rat leapt from the shelves, knocking a pan off a hanging rack before skittering into a crack between the fridge's air vents. His light followed the rat and reflected off something shiny. A stiff wire, partly silver and rusted, lay in the middle of the stain.
Ugh. Later.
Dominic retraced his steps back into the living room. He poked his head through another door and discovered a tint gray tiled bathroom with a clawfoot tub. Another adjacent room appeared to be a large bedroom. There was a dust-covered dresser, a couple nightstands, and a double bed, and a single child's bed that's backing was styled into a pretty impressive-looking white tiger. Dominic smiled, but his expression faltered as he realized to whom that small bed must have belonged to. He sighed again. Dom wasn't a religious man, but it was hard to believe in a righteous universe when it felt like the innocent always received the roughest treatment from it. Dom looked past the bed toward a closet door. He took a step closer to what he assumed to be Murray's little boy's side of the room and noticed shelves filled with plastic toys and race cars, adorned with large eyes and goofy expressions. Beside the bed, a pile of children's picture books lay limp, their spines blackened by mold. The building's moisture had taken its toll, and once again, he felt a bubble of frustration rise in his gut. What exactly were he and his team supposed to accomplish here? If it was reclamation, then were they supposed to renovate the whole building? That wouldn't take months, even in his supervisor's engineer speak. It would take at least a year to get this place back up and running again. Dominic maneuvered himself to the front of the closed doors, but stopped himself from opening it after spotting something on one of the kids' shelves that did not belong. Dominic walked around the end of the tiger bed and aimed his light next to a row of plastic animals. The beam landed on a satchel, strikingly similar to the ones Glenn, Harry, and he had left on the first floor of the building. In fact, this satchel was exactly identical to those, and when he picked it up, he turned over to see a white, stitched-in Fazbear Entertainment logo. This was a Fazbear Engineer-issued satchel, just like the ones he and his crew had received upon being hired. Could it have belonged to Murray? No, that didn't make any sense. This was the only item in the room not caked in dust. It had been brought in, not left here to rot. Had another team come in before them? Were they assigned a similar job or merely tasked with surveying the building? If they had the same assignment as Dom's team, why hadn't they finished it? And why leave company property in such a dilapidated state? He sat down on the edge of the tiger bed and opened up the leather case. Amid the expected tools, Dominic's eyebrow rose as his flashlight beam illuminated a small battery-powered tape recorder. Curiosity piqued, he picked it up and peered through the recorder's small window. The cassette tape inside was halted midway through its playback. Dom pressed the rewind button to check if the recorder's battery was still functional. It was. The tape began to spin, returning to its starting point with a soft, purring whir. When the tape was fully rewound, the recorder clicked off. Dom shook off a shiver and illuminated the room with his light to ensure he was alone, feeling rather foolish for his caution. What was he afraid of? Well, the rats weren't exactly appealing, but they also weren't a threat. Perhaps it was something more apparitional. The sensation of a ghost or lingering memories entombed within a tape hidden away. He dismissed the sudden heebie-jeebies that had come over him and refocused on the recorder, pressing play. A shushing sound filled the room, followed by a crackle, then a man's voice.
I can't believe they sent us in here the week before Christmas. My wife wants to kill me, and I don't blame her. We were supposed to decorate the tree with her nieces tonight. Instead, I'm trapped in here.
Trapped? Dom thought. What did the guy mean by that?
And what the hell is up with that? I mean, the money is good. No one can deny that. And we could use the cheddar. But all of it just doesn't seem to add up for me. I personally think we should pry the boards off one of the windows, but Terrence says if we do that, we'll get fired.
Oh, we're supposed to clean up a mess in here, not make another one,
he says. But seriously? We can't get out and go home to our families tonight? I don't get why the door locked behind us to begin with. Why would it lock from the outside?
Dominic pressed the stop button, his fingers trembling ever so slightly. The double doors that had slammed shut behind them and his crew when they entered the building loomed in his mind. He hadn't go back to check the door. He had merely assumed they would be able to exit when they were ready. But what if they couldn't? A faint whir and tapping sound emanated from the hallway, Dominic stiffened, straightened his posture as he shined his light toward the doorway. It stood vacant, devoid of any further sounds. He shifted his position to face the door directly and pressed play on the recorder.
Okay, so I might as well document what we've found so far. For the record, it's weird and it sucks. I'm not about to get fired over this project, but we are doing our best here. Because we weren't given clear instructions on what to do, Terrence is the one who suggested our current course of action. We were pretty much lost at first. I mean, we're in an eerie building filled with old and musty stuff. What are we supposed to do with it? Sort it? Catalog it? Organize it by mold? Fazbear Entertainment could have hired some high schoolers if they just wanted to move some boxes to and fro. So I doubt we have been called upon to actually root around. So the only conclusion we have left is to finish projects we found on the ground floor. So that's what we've been doing. We started going to work on some of the bots a few hours ago. We've been on the clock since... until just past midnight. It's a good thing we have watches. With the windows all boarded up, you can't tell if it's night or day outside. I'm just glad we found that generator. Without it, we'd have to rely on our flashlights alone. And who knows how long they'd have lasted.
Dominic stopped the recorder once more. A generator. He stood up, taking the tape recorder with him as he exited the small bedroom. He would check behind the door near the beds later. If there was a generator in this building, he wanted to locate it, and he suspected it wasn't hidden within this abandoned small apartment. Dominic returned to the hall. The unmistakable sound of an engine powering up reverberated throughout the building. The bare light bulbs overhead flickered to life. He looked up and grinned, relishing the steady thrum of the motor. Glenn and Harry must have located the generator first on the third floor.
Way to go, guys.
Dom turned off his flashlight and tucked it into his pocket, spinning it like a gunslinger holstering his revolver after a successful duel. Although the overhead bulbs did little to dispel the surrounding darkness, they provided just enough light for him to navigate his footing. It was probably wise to conserve his battery life anyway. Dom resolved to continue searching the rest of the floor before reuniting with Glenn and Harry. As he approached the next closed door, the same putrid odor from the kitchen had reappeared. This time, however, it was more pronounced, and Dominic could discern its source with alarming clarity. It reeked of roadkill, of decaying flesh. Something nearby was undeniably dead. There were plenty of rats, Dom told himself. It wouldn't be surprising if a few carcasses were strewn across the factory. But as Dom attempted to reason himself, staring at the closed door, the same nagging feeling of being watched was creeping across the back of his spine. Did he really want to go in there? He exhaled and sagged his shoulders. Then he opened the door. A bit of the hallway's light bulb's weak light slipped in through the open sliver of the doorway. Dom pushed the door open wider, realizing that his shoulders were bunched up in anticipation of finding whatever was causing the foul odor. But all he saw when he looked into the room were two rows of hanging clothes and a shelf stacked with folded pajamas. His brow furrowed in confusion as he surveyed the garments. And then he noticed another door. It dawned on him that this door led back to the bedroom he had just left. Clever. Murray had converted one of the factory's small storage rooms into a closet. Dom wrinkled his nose. The stench was undeniably stronger in this room. It was likely just a dead animal, perhaps trapped behind one of the walls. In fact, there was a strong possibility that something had died within the walls of this place. With that thought in mind, Dominic stepped back from the door and continued down the hallway. For the next several minutes, Dominic explored the remainder of the factory's second floor. He discovered nothing but more storage rooms, most of which were empty, and two additional office spaces that had yet to be repurposed. The rooms were still filled with old desk chairs and vintage office equipment. Everything appeared to be roughly half a decade old, with typewriters on each desk, each bearing a date stamp from the 1920s. He highly doubted that Fazbear Entertainment would be concerned about him repairing equipment that his grandfather had used during World War I. That said, it also meant they probably wouldn't mind if said equipment went missing. It could likely be repaired, allowing him to sell it all off to collectors for a quick profit, while keeping one as a charming desk piece back home. The farther Dom explored away from the apartment, the weaker the scent of decay became. The rooms at the far end of the hall smelled mildewy at best, devoid of any trace of rot. This was a relief. If the rotting smell lingered near the apartment, it would lead credence to his theory that animals, likely rats and raccoons, had ransacked the fridge when food had been left behind. With thoughts of the rot set aside, and the lights gradually flickering to life in each room he entered, Dom felt comfortable enough to keep the tape recorder playing as he explored. He wished he knew the man's name who was keeping him company while he poked around. For now, he decided to refer to him as Tape Guy, until he eventually revealed his name.
Now, the first thing we did was make a few repairs to the building. The roof had some pretty bad leaks, and we took care of the worst ones, at least for the short term. The old tin roof obviously needs to be completely redone, but we plugged things up the best we could. We also shored up a few steps and tackled some of the building's old wiring. We realized we had to do that when we got the generator going and still didn't have much light anywhere. There was a short in the system that was causing a cascade failure. We rerouted a few things and got the lights working in most of the rooms. The bulbs are old, though, and we couldn't find any replacement anywhere. So that's a short-term fix as well.
Dom halted the tape recorder upon reaching the last room on the second floor. It was an old restroom, clearly untouched by Murray. Dominic turned the tap at one of the sinks, but no water flowed. The three stall doors reflected the typical state of a dilapidated bathroom. One was closed, another had been ripped from its hinges, and the third remained attached, though the lock was shattered. The smell of sour sewage was prominent, but Dom's nose twitched. That familiar rotting smell in this room, too. He could recognize the scent just below the rank concoction of rust and feces. Were there more dead animals? Not finding any reason to inspect the stalls beyond a cursory glance, Dom quickly exited the restroom and retraced his steps down the hallway. He clicked the tape recorder back on as he walked.
Now, I assessed the condition of the endoskeletons we found on the ground floor. Some were in the early stages and needed a lot of work to be done to be brought up to Fazbear code. Others only had the barest amount of work left to do. I should do stand-up when I get out of here. I'll admit, while I still don't like being cooped up in here, I'm pretty excited to get started on these robots. After we take a break and split a couple of protein bars and jerky, the dinner of champions, we're going to go ahead and fix up one cool-looking endoskeleton. The thing looks homemade. The Murray guy who owned the building probably built it from bits and parts he picked up from all the machinery left here. I don't have my hopes too high on being able to salvage it. It looks pretty busted up. In fact, it's completely missing any legs. So if we find a pair on any endos that aren't salvageable, we'll take them off and add them to this one. If we can get back up and working again, that is. Now I think that'll be the plan moving forward as well for any of the other endoskeletons here as well. Moving parts from the older models to the new. Something borrowed, something new, that kind of thing. I must be turning into a philosopher with the less energy I have. I'm gonna go get some coffee and report back when I have something to report.
The tape recorder clicked off just as Dominic reached the main staircase. From the floor above, he heard a heavy thud, followed by the murmur of voices and the sound of clumping footsteps descending the stairs at the corner of the second floor landing. While he waited for Glenn and Harry to join him, Dom removed the tape from the recorder and began to fiddle with it. He was eager to learn more about the other team that had been here, but no matter what he tried, the only sound that followed Tape Guy's initial, seemingly solitary entry was a cacophony of static. Dominic stared at the recorder, pondering why its owner had abandoned it. A shiver coursed through him as an unwelcome thought emerged from his subconscious, causing the skin on the back of his neck to prickle.
I wasn't seeing things!
Sure you weren't. You're spooked and it's messing with your head.
Is not!
Is too!
Is not!
Is too!
I'm sorry. Are we back in kindergarten? Do I need to spank your bottoms and put you both in timeout chairs? What's going on?
Nothing's going on. Harry thought he saw something move when we were up on the third floor.
I did!
What's up there?
Bunch of junk. Boxes of thread and machine parts. Old furniture. Some lumber, surprisingly. A mess of half-finished inventions. Not sure what most of them are supposed to be. The whole floor is one open space stuffed with odd old crap.
And the generator.
Yeah, and a generator is up there. I thought it was a lost cause when we found it, but genius here got it going.
It's not going to run for very long. There's not much gas left in it.
How long?
A couple hours, maybe?
Glenn strolled past Dominic, making his way down the stairs.
Boys, I think we should call it quits for today. We can get some cans of gas and some light bulbs. Most of the bulbs up there are on their last legs, like that one. We can come back more prepared tomorrow.
I hope we can.
Glenn stopped and turned slowly back to meet Dom's gaze.
What's that supposed to mean? What'd you find? And what is that smell? I got a whiff of it as we passed this level, and I didn't think much of it, but... Ugh! God, that's rank!
Really? I don't smell anything.
Of course you can't back me up on this. Seriously, Dom, did you find a dead animal or something?
If there is one, it's gotta have died inside the walls or something. Let's head back downstairs, and I'll tell you what I found.
Glenn looked down the hall where Dom had came from. He frowned, but he eventually acquiesced.
Yeah, okay.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Trapped!
Back on the ground floor, seated around the unfinished robotics dissection tables, Dominic recounted everything he had gleaned from the tape guy's recording. The men retraced their steps to the entrance, only to discover that the doors were indeed stuck. A mechanism hidden from view on the factory's exterior had sealed the doors shut. The realization that this locking mechanism was designed to keep things from escaping, rather than allowing entry, was not lost on them, heightening their suspicions about the job they had accepted. Harry was trembling, as per usual, but Glenn had an inquisitive look on his face.
Another team? Why didn't Fazbear Entertainment tell us about them?
I plan to ask.
Why didn't we bring an axe? Or a chainsaw?
Harry was practically the embodiment of paranoia, continuously murmuring under his breath there had to be another way out. Yet, none of them knew where to search. Upon their arrival, they inspected the perimeter of the building and found that the factory had only one set of doors leading inside.
What kind of factory has just one set of doors?
That was the question on Dominic's mind as well. During their earlier patrol, they had noted where two other exit doors were supposed to be. However, it appeared they had been removed. The indentations in the wall were less worn, showing a reddish hue instead of the faded pink or blood orange that characterized the rest of the factory's walls. Well, if there wasn't any exit doors on the ground floor, they had to consider other options.
I don't suppose you saw a balcony or a fire escape on the third floor?
Harry was staring at the costume carousel, pointing at it with a fidgeting finger.
Were there two court jester costumes when we first got here?
Glenn and Dom frowned and looked at the row of costumes.
Who knows? It's not like you can see much with just our flashlights.
Dom studied the costumes closely. With the added illumination from the overhead lights, the costumes were no longer lurking in the shadows, making them significantly less eerie. However, as he examined them, an unsettling feeling lingered. Were there multiple jester costumes? Surely he must have remembered incorrectly. Perhaps the shadows were playing tricks on his mind? After all, the only others who could have moved them were Harry and Glenn, both of which had been together the entire time on the third floor. It seemed more likely that Harry was just the one misremembering.
There were two. I noticed stuff like that.
Glenn and Dominic exchanged a glance. There was something in Glenn's eyes that Dominic hadn't noticed before. A seriousness and intensity, reminiscent of a soldier summoned to the battlefield. Dominic's gaze drifted to a vein near Glenn's temple, visibly pulsing with tension.
I hate to say this, but I think we need to get back up to the second floor and figure out what's causing that smell.
Dom cocked his head.
Why?
Boss, I've smelled something like that one other time, while I was in service, and, well, let's just say I'm not confident it's a dead animal up there.
What do you mean? What aren't you both telling me?
Dominic didn't respond to Harry. His mind was too preoccupied to that stain inside the fridge.
I think you're right.
The men made their way back to the gallery kitchen in Murray's makeshift apartment. Dominic pulled the hem of his t-shirt above to cover his nose, breathing through the fabric as he and Glenn, seemingly accustomed to the odor, approached the fridge. Harry lingered a few steps behind, pressing his back against the wall. Glenn gripped the handle of the refrigerator with a mechanic's cloth and, with a bit of force, yanked the cold door open.
Oh, God!
Dominic's stomach churned as he struggled to block out the sound of Harry retching on the linoleum behind them. The sour stench of Harry's vomit mingled with the sickly sweet odor of decaying flesh, creating an overwhelming assault on his senses. Inside the fridge lay the corpse of a man in a mechanic's uniform, his bones shattered and his limbs contorted, compressed like a discarded doll. His body had been forced into the confined space, limbs twisted at unnatural angles to fit. Dominic's mind drifted to the man who had been recording his voice on the tape. Was this him? Or Terrence? Or hell, any number of crew members the man on the recording might have had working alongside him in this forsaken place? Why hadn't he opened the refrigerator earlier? He had seen the stain, and now, under the brighter light, rather than just his dim flashlight, the mark was unmistakably dried blood. But that little rat had spooked him enough to turn tail and run, causing him to ignore it during his entire traverse across the second floor. Even as the stench never dissipated, growing stronger or weaker depending on his distance from the apartment. Dominic's gaze shifted to the bedroom, particularly to the closet, where a similar stench lingered. Glenn caught his glance. Without exchanging a single word, Glenn understood precisely what Dominic suspected, and where he believed another corpse may be concealed.
You're thinking what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah.
What? What?
Harry struggled to catch his breath, clutching his sides as his legs trembled and his body swayed unsteadily. Glenn draped one of Harry's arms over his shoulder and, in an uncharacteristically sympathetic gesture, guided him to the second floor landing.
Wait here, Harry. Get your bearings. We'll be right back.
Harry's face was ghostly white, and a look of protest flickered in his eyes. But he didn't argue with Glenn. Instead, he nodded and sank down to sit at the top of the main stairs, resting his head between his legs. Glenn looked back to Dominic.
Follow me.
Glenn now took the lead and Dom followed behind him. It took the men seconds to reach the closet door of Murray's bedroom and open the closet door. And after moving some of the clothes around...
Sweet Jesus!
Oh, man. Oh, that's just...
Glenn stared at the mummified corpse, shaking his head in disbelief, while Dominic turned away, desperately trying to erase the horrific sight from his mind. But he couldn't. In the dimness of the room he had opened earlier, a body laid stowed away among a row of men's suits. Initially, he had mistaken the dark shape for a large winter coat. But now, with the clothes pushed aside and the light illuminating the space, it was unmistakably a dead body. The corpse was wearing one of Murray's suit jackets, and a metal rod had been speared through his chest, extending from side to side. The rod's hook had been placed on the wooden hanger, allowing the body to hang like the rest of the garments.
My God, he's been eviscerated.
Dominic looked back, his gaze dropping to the corpse's midsection. He quickly covered his mouth with a hand, a wave of nausea crashing over him. The man's entrails had been pulled from his chest, sloppily dangling below the cadaver's belt line.
Did that tape talk about...
As one, Dominic and Glenn whirled around to the sound of Harry screaming. Without a moment to fully process what had happened, Glenn shoved past Dominic and sprinted out of the room, with Dominic following closely behind him down the hallway. When Dominic turned to where he had last seen Harry, it took a moment for his mind to process the unnatural and surreal sight before him, along with the hopelessness of being unable to stop anything from happening. It overwhelmed him. Harry was dead, and Dominic had just witnessed his murder, and he could clearly see his killer. The court jester. Not a real jester, nor a human of flesh and blood, but a robot clad in bright pink and yellow-green King's Fool costume, with a wide, leering grin. It had decapitated Harry, and his head, still frozen in mid-shriek, laid limply on the ground. Little Harry was dead, yet his body remained propped upright by the jester. Like a bear scooping honey from a beehive, the robot's arm plunged into Harry's neck, pulling out strands of gray-red muscle and tissue. Eventually, the costume looked up from its work. Its eyes were empty. But as the jester stood, its smile became unobscured, revealing the glowing, amber eyes of the machine beneath the fabric, hidden behind the felt grin. Glenn grabbed Dominic's arm and shouted,
"Come on!"
Dominic let Glenn drag him backward along the hallway. His legs felt like jelly, and he struggled to catch his breath, but he managed to keep pace with Glenn as they rushed toward the end of the corridor and the staircase leading to the third floor. As they ascended the steps, Dom glanced back and saw the jester charging down the hall like a bullet. Its right arm reached out to grab them, while its left arm was curved awkwardly, as if cradling something between its elbow. The men sprinted through the third floor, passing the generator that Harry had managed to revive, and headed toward the stairwell at the far end, intent on reaching the second floor landing once more. As they neared the stairs, Dom and Glenn halted abruptly, turning at the sound of a mechanical growl, low and menacing, like a lion stalking its prey. Their eyes darted upward, to where the upper stairs were shrouded in shadow. And there, they saw the jester reappear, moving sinuously along the ceiling like a twisted circus acrobat. They needed a swift escape, and Dom's eyes darted to the side of the stairs. The slide. Glenn must have thought of it first, because before Dom could react, Glenn was already pushing him toward it. With a firm shove between his shoulder blades, Glenn stuffed him into the narrow metal chute.
I'm right behind you. Go!
Dom felt Glenn's boot press against his back as they both careened down the slide. He landed with a thud on the lumpy, filthy mattresses strewn across the first floor, nearly colliding with Glenn, who hit the ground at almost the same exact time. Glenn was back on his feet in an instant, grabbing Dom by the arm and hauling him up. Dom stood, momentarily stunned. At the bottom of the stairs lay Harry's lifeless body, blood still pooling warm and dark from the stump at his neck. He looked at Glenn, but Glenn's eyes were darting frantically around the room, searching for something.
We need to hide!
Dom snapped back to his senses and quickly shifted his gaze to the top of the stairs. The jester had vanished. He had no idea how they had managed to lose it, but now wasn't the time to question their good fortune. Instead, he turned his focus to helping Glenn find a hiding spot. His heart sank as he scanned the barren, open ground floor. There was hardly any cover to be found. The only option that came to mind was the massive looming machine against the back wall.
Under the lights machine.
Glenn looked to where Dominic was pointing and shrugged.
Good as place as any.
Dominic took the lead this time, moving as silently yet swiftly as possible. They ducked behind the nearest pillar before hurrying across the 20 or so feet between it and the looming machine. Dominic kept glancing over his shoulder, checking for any sign of pursuit from a beast with cold orange eyes. Once they had reached the machine, he dove beneath a rotting pile of lace. Glenn, right on his heels, followed suit, and together they huddled underneath the decaying fabric. The lace was damp with mildew, and the stench made it impossible for Dominic to breathe through his nose, forcing him to take shallow, quiet breaths through his mouth. He could feel the tickle of Glenn's hot breath behind him, signaling that Glenn was doing the same. For a full minute, Dom and Glenn breathed in silence, their senses sharp, straining to catch any hint of metallic footsteps or the whirring of servos. Dom, unable to see anything through the murky lace, closed his eyes, hoping that by shutting off one sense, he could think more clearly about their escape. Harry had been right. There was a missing costume from the carousel, but whatever it was inside it had to be more than just a machine. Fazbear robots were programmed to perform simple tasks, singing, dancing, entertaining crowds. No one had ever created a robot capable of such agility and speed, let alone one driven by such malice and savagery. Dominic's mind replayed the recording of Tape Guy. They had seen several Fazbear animatronics being repaired in the main floor. But the homemade endoskeleton the recording had mentioned was nowhere in sight. He should have noticed that earlier, but his thoughts had been preoccupied with the locked doors and the fate of the previous reclamation team. Dominic's mind raced 1,000 miles an hour. He wanted to ask Glenn what he was thinking. He seemed to have been a better man of action than he was now, but he knew better than to make a sound now. Since escape wasn't an option, their only choice was to stay hidden and quiet. Very, very quiet. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. Dominic wouldn't have believed it was possible, but he had fallen asleep. Beneath the revolting skin-crawling lace, he had somehow closed his eyes and drifted into unconsciousness. He only realized this when Glenn elbowed him awake, then began clawing his way out from under the decaying fabric. Dominic blinked several times, remembered where he was, and hissed.
What are you doing?
Glenn looked back, swiping a few cobwebs from his face.
Don't worry. Whatever it is isn't down here. I've been listening for a while. I haven't heard a thing.
Dominic frowned. Even if he was convinced, it didn't change the fact they were still trapped inside a vast warehouse with an actual killer robot lurking within. They were like mice in a snake tank, with no escape beyond the serpent's jaws.
We need a weapon.
Dominic nodded, his mind racing with questions. He wanted to ask what kind of weapon could possibly stop something capable of severing a man's head with ease, but he remained silent on that thought.
All I have in my toolbox that could work is a wire cutter and a wrench. It's not a big one. Anything in your box that could work?
Maybe there is something on the work tables we could use.
Dominic nodded. It wasn't normal for Glenn to take charge, but in this circumstance, Dominic was very okay with it. He was out of his depth. Both men kept their heads on a constant swivel as they cautiously crossed the factory floor, remaining alert for any signs of danger. Once they reached the work table, they began to search quietly for any weapon they could use.
Now, just so we are on the same page, you realize what's going on here, don't you?
Dominic frowned. Did he? Probably, but he kept silent and allowed Glenn to continue speaking.
Fazbear Entertainment is trying to clean up a mess. They sent in a team to do that. Team A, let's call them. They failed.
Understatement.
Yeah. So, we're Team B. And we're either going to stop whatever killed those guys and killed... killed Harry.
Dominic was about to agree when his words caught in his throat, and a chill ran through him as his eyes locked onto a discarded, bloodied, court jester costume lying beneath one of the work tables. Dominic sucked in his breath sharply.
What?
Glenn, I think...
That was as far as he got, for as he spoke, Glenn brushed past the costumes hanging on the garment rack, and Glenn failed to notice the fuchsia and white mushroom costume swaying gently, a flicker of orange coming to light from its gaping round dark eyes and a carnivorous O-shaped mouth.
Glenn, look out!
Glenn didn't bother to turn around to see what Dominic had noticed. Wisely, he simply started to run, but it made little difference. The robot inside the mushroom costume had reflexes faster than Glenn's. Before he could even take a single step, the mushroom man's hand shot out and seized him by the back of his shirt collar. Glenn flailed, but his efforts proved futile. The mushroom man's held their hand and gripped the back of Glenn's brown leather belt in an emotion so swift that Dominic could barely follow it. The mushroom man lifted Glenn off the ground, suspended him belly down for a brief moment before taking a long stride and slamming Glenn head first into the brick wall behind the garment rack. Glenn's head cracked against the brick, instantly pulverizing like a smashed melon. The remnants of his skull, still attached to his spine, were driven into his neck as his shoulders crumpled against the wall. When the mushroom man released Glenn's belt, the mangled corpse fell to the concrete, a gruesome combination of shredded tissue and shattered bone from the ribcage up. The creature then lifted its gaze from its handiwork, shifting its head to cast a sidelong glance at Dom, its orange eyes glowing even more intensely from the cavernous mouth. That was when Dominic's brain finally sent a message to his feet. He turned and ran. He had to retrieve the satchel on the second floor. There was no hope for a weapon here. His only chance lay in the possibility that the previous team had left something useful behind. Dominic steeled himself and sprinted up the main floor stairs, passing Harry's discarded corpse on his way to the second floor landing. His heart pounded with every step, every nerve ending in his body on high alert. Once on the second floor, he began to sidle down the hall. Every few steps, he glanced back or paused to listen. Aside from his own ragged breathing and the city drone of the generator, he heard nothing. The factory lacked even the usual creaks and groans of a typical old building. Other than the generator's motor, the silence was preternatural. Dominic dashed to the bedroom of the apartment, having lost his flashlight long before Glenn was killed. He flicked on the bedroom light to locate the satchel. As soon as he spotted it, he hurtled around the tiger bed, snatched the satchel, and retreated from the room even faster than he had entered. No longer concerned with being quiet, Dominic burst back into the hallway and raced up the stairs to the third floor. At the top of the steps, he stopped and bent over to catch his breath, clutching the satchel's handle as if it was his last lifeline. Now that he had tools, even if there wasn't a weapon he could immediately use, he felt a surge of confidence. He believed he could at least create something to stop the costume-wearing killing machine. All he needed was a little time. But time wasn't something he was going to get. In the corner of the room, behind the generator, a costume figure rose to his feet. The costume the machine wore this time looked as if it had not been crafted by human hands, but hastily stitched together by the machine itself using whatever it could scavenge. It was adorned with faux white matted fur and grayish purple stripes. Its rotting mane and broken whiskers. The horror intensified as it lunged over the generator towards Dominic. Dominic whirled and lunged toward the stairs. He didn't make it to the first tread. The endoskeleton clad in the lion costume caught him by the ankle just as he was about to descend. Dominic's feet were yanked out from under him, and he fell face first, his chin striking one of the hardwood treads. Dominic cried out, but the impact of his chin was just the beginning of his suffering. Yanked backward with brutal force, he thudded up the stairs before being spun onto his back and slammed to the floor. The impact reverberated through his entire skeletal system, and the pain was intense. Yet again, the pain was nothing compared to what came next. A fireball of agony erupted into his midsection, starting at his solar plexus and searing up through his chest. It felt as though a band of molten metal were choking him from within, gripping his throat with relentless intensity. Dominic looked down and opened his mouth to scream, but no sound emerged. The creature in the lion suit had reached up through his solar plexus and seized his trachea from within. It now yanked his trachea downward through his chest with brutal force. Dominic's heart, pounding impossibly fast, seemed to explode in his chest. He fought for breath but found none. He reached for a coherent thought, but it eluded him as well. Instead, all he could do was surrender to the darkness that mercifully smothered the fiery torment, tearing him apart from inside out. After the disappearance of Harry, Glenn, and Dominic, the fate of the old factory housing the Mimic remained shrouded in mystery. How many teams ventured inside before Fazbear Entertainment finally called it quits? Or how many engineers were required to secure the Mimic? Mr. Burroughs was able to procure it, albeit in a different state than how Murray recalled. Murray himself seemed haunted by a horrific event surrounding his creation, yet it was hard to believe those memories were tied to the tragic fates of the three men we had just witnessed. As of now, it feels as if a crucial chapter is missing from this unfolding narrative. Somehow, the Mimic had transformed into the storyteller. For reasons unknown, Fazbear Entertainment has contained it, intending to repurpose it. There are vital answers and events we lack, like a movie missing a scene, or a video game released prematurely. Whatever the case may be, we're left in suspense, awaiting the revelations of the secrets of the Mimic. And with all that said, this ends tonight's program of Into the Night. Next time, we will be returning back to Gregory, whom is still lost beneath the underside of the Freddy Fazbear Mega Pizzaplex. Will he be able to escape from the underground with his determination? Find out all of this and more next time on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining on our Discord, or supporting us on our Patreon or merch store using the various links in the description of this episode. As always, I have been your host, Nick, and I would like to thank all of you once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.